Thank you for the invitation to come here and speak to you. It's really exciting to be at such a diverse conference and great to be back at Perimeter again. So I'd like to tell you about some work I've been doing thinking about cosmology from a holographic perspective. So this talk has two parts, and the first part I'd like to just try and give a big picture overview of what holography is, some of its distinctive features, and how these could be useful for cosmology, for understanding the early universe. And in this first part of the talk, I'd like to sort of review some older work constructing new cosmological, new models of the early universe based around holography. So this is older work, but I think it's useful to review it for those of you who aren't cosmologists, and this will also give us some sort of things to discuss in the discussion session afterwards. In the second part of the talk, which is a bit of a gear shift, I'd like to sort of talk about some of the more recent work I've been doing. This is probably aimed more towards my colleagues in theoretical cosmology. Please, everybody, just ask questions at any point in time, especially just to understand what's going on. Okay, so let's start with holography. So really, from a string theory perspective, one of the key insights into gravity over the last 50 years is that gravity is holographic in character. This is something that began with studies of black hole entropy, the fact that the entropy of a black hole is proportional to the area, and developed with the advent of string theory, we found precise microscopic constructions that realized the principle of holography later on. So what is holography? So it's the idea that gravitational physics has a completely equivalent description in terms of an ordinary quantum field theory, which has no gravity in it, and this quantum field theory lives in one dimension less. So it's a completely equivalent description of the same physics. It's called a dual description. So if you want a sort of a coarse picture in your mind, it's something like this. There's some space-time in d plus one dimensions. It's called the bulk space-time. And it's got some sort of radial direction like this. And this is sort of a schematic representation of the geometry, which we'll come to in a moment. And gravity on this space-time is dual. It's equivalent to the physics of a QFT. That's a quantum field theory in d dimensions, so one dimension less. So if this is the bulk, the metric on which the quantum field theory lives is called the boundary metric. It's not exactly the boundary of this space-time because the boundary is only defined up to a conformal class, but roughly it's the boundary of the space-time. So that's the setup. So if we're talking about a quantum field theory, a QFT that lives on a flat space-time, then the geometry of this bulk space-time on which the gravity lives has this form here. So there's a radial coordinate r, that's this radial coordinate here, and moving towards the boundary of the space-time is going to large values of this radius r. And the background metric just has this scale factor here that depends on the radius. So for historical reasons, this is the space-time known as the domain wall space-time, but it's a somewhat misleading name because really in these older historical studies, you had two copies of this space-time joined back to back. So it was an honest domain wall, but this is really just one copy of that. So it's still called a domain wall space-time, but it really just means this metric here. And so from string theory, the setups where we have a really good microscopic understanding of what's going on, a top-down construction by taking the decoupling limit of brains in string theory, that corresponds to space-time geometries whose asymptotics are one of two classes. You can have the main class is asymptotically anti-de Sitter space-time, so that's when the scale factor is asymptotically exponential, and this is a sort of famous ADS-CFT correspondence. And for space-times with anti-de Sitter asymptotics, this corresponds to quantum field theories that have a fixed point in the ultraviolet described by a conformal field theory. There's another class of asymptotics which is related to taking the decoupling limit of non-conformal brains. And for these, the space-time geometry is asymptotically power law. The scale factor goes as the radius to some power n, where n is a number that depends on the particular class of brains you're considering, but it's bigger than one. And so the way holography works is that there's a holographic dictionary that relates the asymptotic behavior of the gravitational fields as you go off to large radii, and that's related to the correlation functions of operators in the dual quantum field theory. So there's a dictionary, a map that translates between the observables in the quantum field theory and the asymptotic behavior of gravitational fields in the bulk. So the point is, though, that there's good reasons for believing that gravity should be holographic regardless of the asymptotics. Things like the black hole entropy formula, the fact that entropy is proportional to area for black hole, this doesn't depend on the space-time asymptotics, whether it's ADS, de Sitter, or flat space. So we'd like gravity to be holographic regardless of the asymptotics, and that would imply that there's a holographic description for cosmology. So this is what we're going to try and construct in a rather bottom-up fashion. So the picture here is very similar to before. It's just that now that the emergent direction, the extra dimension, is going to be a time direction rather than a radial direction. And we're going to describe, or attempt to describe, four-dimensional cosmological evolution in terms of the physics of a three-dimensional quantum field theory. And the same picture is going to hold. Basically, using the standard dictionary we have in standard holography, we're going to sort of try and extend that dictionary to a dictionary between the observables of this three-dimensional quantum field theory and the asymptotic fall-off of gravitational fields at late times in this cosmology. And this dictionary works both ways. If you know the asymptotic gravitational behavior in the cosmology, you can construct the observables in the dual quantum field theory, but also vice versa. Just by doing calculations in the dual quantum field theory, you can reconstruct the asymptotic behavior of the gravitational picture, and that's precisely the information we need to know if we're trying to construct, reconstruct what we see in the cosmic microwave background. You know, what we see in the power spectrum of the cosmic microwave background is related to the asymptotic fall-off of gravitational fields in the bulk as we go towards the end of the inflationary era.
Should we think of this like the three-dimensional QFT is a solution to the Wheeler-DeWitt equation that determines everything in time?
Yeah, we probably could think of things that way. There's lots of sort of different ways of approaching this, but that will be one way of thinking about things.
Or I should say that plus whatever UV completion that theory requires.
Yeah, so that's right. So if this is asymptotically de Sitter, then this will be a quantum field theory that has a UV fixed point described by a CFT, and that's right. You could use the Wheeler-DeWitt equation to set this up. We're not going to follow that route, but yes, that should work.
Maybe this is in the same vein.
Please.
But if you're looking at the time-like direction, this doesn't... Well, tell me what's holographic about it. It just sounds like, naively, that you could... You're saying, okay, late times, I can take a slice and retrodict earlier times, which
yeah.
is a feature of most deterministic.
Yeah, so the idea is that I'll come onto this in a bunch of slides, but basically, that's right. So where does the time direction emerge from? So the point is that quantum field theories, their physics depends on the energy scale at which you probe them. So this is this idea of a normalization group flow. So you know, if you probe quantum field theories on a high energy scale, the physics is different to if you probe it on a lower energy scale. So there's this notion of the renormalization scale in the quantum field theory relating to the energy at which you're probing it. And RG flow, as you change this renormalization scale, that's what corresponds to time evolution in the bulk. So probing physics at different times corresponds to basically probing things in the QFT at different energy scales. So the idea is that this quantum field theory captures the full...
Okay.
Yeah, so you shouldn't think of this as being a single slice of this geometry. This is a quantum field theory that's sort of, in some sense, totally separate, lives in three dimensions, and the RG scale in the quantum field theory corresponds to the time direction, roughly speaking, in the cosmology. So the whole of the four-dimensional space-time is captured by the physics of this three-dimensional quantum field theory. It's not just a slice at late times.
Okay. But isn't it fair to say that this, in your construction, this lives at the future infinity of...
Yes, that's right. So I mean, in some sense, I'm trying not to get too technical, but that's right. So the metric on which this quantum field theory lives is related to the sort of leading asymptotic behavior on these constant time slices here. You're up to a conformal factor, that's right. And then the sub-leading behavior of the metric here is related to observables of like the stress tensor, correlation functions of the energy momentum tensor in the quantum field theory. Yeah, so it's a somewhat sort of, I'm trying to sort of give just a sort of coarse-grained overview, but there's basically a map between the geometry of this metric here and the late-time geometry here and correlation functions of the energy momentum tensor in this quantum field theory and the sort of canonical momentum, the sort of sub-leading fall-off behavior on the gravity side. Please.
Should we invoke holography when we know that the theory in the bulk is not supergravity but FLRW gravity, and also the space in the bulk is not ADS?
I'll come on to all that sort of, you know, over the next couple of slides. The idea is to sort of really bootstrap what happens in cosmological spacetimes, starting from spacetimes that do have a well-understood holographic description, like an ADS CFT. Astrid.
Maybe you'll get to that, but can you quickly comment whether you would expect actually both sets of the correspondence to be local quantum field theories?
Yes, good, that's right. So
why you would expect that the boundary theory can be local?
That's an excellent question. So one of the sort of caveats, the terms and conditions in this statement that gravity should be holographic regardless of the asymptotics, for certain asymptotics, you wouldn't necessarily expect this quantum field theory even to be local, such as asymptotically flat space-time. This is a topic of much interest right now, but in that case, well, Okay, in cosmology, it will turn out to be a local quantum field theory at late times, essentially because we're constructing this by a mapping based on analytic continuation from standard ADS CFT holography. And so the locality, it will be a local quantum field theory. It has some strange properties relating to unitarity, but I won't sort of get into such specifics in this talk. Okay, let's carry on. So the plan is basically we're going to set up a mapping between the three-dimensional quantum field theory and four-dimensional cosmology, and it's going to be based on standard holography, ADS CFT correspondence. So the big issue here is that we really don't have a good understanding of spacetimes like de Sitter space from a string theory point of view. You know, there's no sort of, it's very difficult trying to find an embedding of de Sitter space within string theory. So we don't have a top-down construction from string theory like you do in ADS CFT correspondence. The idea is instead to proceed from the bottom up. So basically you can set up a one-to-one correspondence between domain wall spacetimes and fluctuations about them and cosmologies and cosmological perturbations. So there's a one-to-one mapping based on analytic continuation between standard holographic spacetimes, ADS CFT correspondence, and cosmological spacetimes. So in other words, if you give me a solution of fluctuations and background in standard holography, ADS CFT, you can just instantly construct a solution of the cosmological equations of motion and cosmological perturbations. And it's this mapping that we're basing a holographic, you know, this is how we're going to set up a holographic dictionary for cosmology. Standard sort of holography plus this mapping from domain walls to cosmologies. So the cosmological metrics we're going to be interested in are the same as the metrics that are appearing in ADS CFT and in standard holography. It's just that the sign of the lattice function has changed. So basically the radial coordinates become a time coordinate. Now, you can go away and do all this very, very carefully using the ADM formalism, and all this is based on some very careful calculations. I'm just trying to give a sort of sketch overview for this talk here. So the background spacetime is just going to be sort of standard FRW cosmologies, and the asymptotics are just like we saw before in sort of standard holography. So asymptotically anti-de Sitter is going to correspond to asymptotically de Sitter spacetimes, and the asymptotic power law domain walls are going to become asymptotically power law cosmologies. The power is bigger than one, so these are spacetime. This is like power law inflation. Both of these spacetime asymptotics are, the scale factor is accelerating, so these are inflationary spacetimes. So this sort of suggests using holography to model the generation of primordial perturbations, which we can then image in the CMB. So late time is going to basically mean towards the end of the inflationary epoch that's generating the primordial perturbations. Another possibility would be thinking about dark energy. You know, very late times, it looks like we're entering a cosmological constant dominated phase right now, suggesting the final fate of the universe might be de Sitter space. So you could also try and think about using holography to try and model late time dark energy, but that's sort of still under development. Okay, so with this caveat that unlike in standard holography, for cosmological spacetimes, we don't have a top-down construction for string theory. We don't have a microscopic understanding of what this dual quantum field theory is. But we're still going to proceed sort of from the bottom up just by analytic continuation. And you can get very far by this. You can get a complete sort of working description to all orders in perturbation theory. So I aimed a bit more at the experts, but I mean, obviously, cosmological perturbation theory, order by order in bulk loops, which is working the planar limits in the quantum field theory. So at least within perturbation theory one on n, this holographic sort of construction works. Non-perturbatively, we still don't understand what's going on. But at least within perturbation theory, you can simply analytically continue metric perturbations from domain wall spacetimes to cosmologies and use this to set up a holographic dictionary for cosmology. So for the cosmic microwave background, that's the CMB, the sort of observables of interest are basically metric perturbations. There's two types. There's like the curvature perturbations and there's the graviton perturbations. And these are, you construct this holographic dictionary. These are related to correlation functions of the stress tensor or energy momentum tensor in the quantum field theory. And you end up with this dictionary that tells you that correlation functions of primordial perturbations are related to quantum field theory correlators of stress tensors. But the key thing is that they're analytically continued to unphysical values of the momenta. So the mapping, this analytic continuation, you can interpret it on the QFT side, on the quantum field theory side, as a continuation in the momenta of the, so you've got correlators of the energy momentum tensor, and you continue them to values of the momentum that would be unphysical in quantum field theory. But this isn't, so the idea is that you've got a standard holographic theory, sort of ADS CFT, some dual quantum field theory, and you compute the observables in this quantum field theory, but you analytically continue the momenta into the complex plane, and the values under this analytic continuation describe the cosmology. And it's not as sort of crazy as it sounds, but it's a very similar, for example, there's a very well understood mapping within standard ADS CFT. If you take correlators in a conformal field theory and you analytically continue the momenta into unphysical values in the complex plane, you find there's a singularities develop, and the residue of those, the coefficient of those singularities are basically scattering amplitudes in flat space in one dimension higher. So in standard ADS CFT, there's this flat space limit that relates CFT correlators to flat space scattering amplitudes, and that operates in a very similar manner. It's basically saying, it's saying that correlation functions continuing the momenta into the complex plane, it still tells you about physics, just in a different space-time, in a different theory. And so this is very similar to that, I think. You know, you've got correlation functions of the stress tensor, you continue the momenta and the rank of the gauge group, the number of colors, to different values in the complex plane, and those map to cosmology.
Sir, could you say what you mean by momenta here?
So on the quantum field theory side, we're computing correlation functions of the energy momentum tensor, and we're Fourier transforming, then we're working in Fourier space, so they depend on the momentum.
This is just wave number, right?
Well, that's right. So in cosmology, we're going to be computing, for example, for the CMB power spectra, we're interested in two-point correlation functions of, you know, the metric perturbations. And we're looking at it in Fourier space, so they depend on the momentum. And the mapping is that you're going to compute correlation functions in the quantum field theory, and you're going to continue these momenta, you know, Q goes to minus IQ, and then take the imaginary part. So this is a mapping that comes out of this holographic dictionary. So the primordial scalar power spectrum and the tensor power spectrum, this is basically the two-point correlation function of curvature perturbations. This is related to the two-point correlation function of gravitons. And they're related via the holographic dictionary to the two sort of components of the stress tensor two-point function. So there's no gravity in this quantum field theory. It's really the energy momentum tensor that I tend to call it the stress tensor. So the two-point correlation function here, it's got two pieces. There's a transverse traceless part, and then there's a trace part here. And the transverse traceless part maps onto the graviton power spectrum, and the trace part maps onto the curvature perturbation power spectrum. So it's basically the picture is you can analytically continue cosmologies to domain walls via this continuation of the momenta and the number of colors, and then use the standard holographic dictionary to set up holographic formulae that link cosmological observables to correlation functions of the energy momentum tensor in the dual quantum field theory. So this is an example of the mapping that happens at two points for the power spectra, and then the similar formulae that you can compute to compute cosmological non-Gaussianities. So like the three-point function of metric perturbations in cosmology is related to the three-point correlation function of stress tensors in the quantum field theory. Matt?
Do you guys ever think about, like, not single clock, like multi-field inflation? Does that have a different mapping, or this is
It's the same mapping, yes. It's the same mapping, yes. So there the point is just that the nature of the quantum field theory changes. So if you had a single scalar field cosmology, like sort of single field inflation, this is due to a sort of CFT deformed by a single scalar operator that's nearly marginal and produces a slow RG flow, which is like slow roll inflation. And if you want to have multiple scalar fields in the bulk, which can generate entropy perturbations and so forth, that's like an RG flow, which you've got two operators that are driving the flow. So yes, you can set it all up, yeah. Great, okay. So it's the big picture is sort of what can a holographic dictionary for cosmology buy you? I think there's two points of interest here. First is it encourages you to think about inflationary calculation, just standard inflation. You can look at it in a different way based on the boundary. So you can start thinking about four-dimensional inflationary cosmology in terms of the physics of a three-dimensional quantum field theory. If it's standard inflation, the geometry is closer to sitter space. So this corresponds to a quantum field theory that's close to conformal. You can really think of it as a 3D conformal field theory deformed by a nearly marginal operator, like we're just saying. So I'll tell you a bit about this and some sort of new work in this direction towards the end of the talk. That'll be the second part. The first part of the talk is I'd just like to sort of recap some older work talking about Yeah, so what you can use this holographic correspondence to construct an alternative way of generating the primordial perturbations, alternative to inflation. And this is interesting because it offers a potential resolution of the Big Bang singularity, and these models are predictive, they're predictive, they're falsifiable, and they do fit the current CMB data. And I think the thing is that holography is, it's a broader paradigm that encompasses both traditional inflation and these new alternative models in a sort of natural way. And the difference between these two possibilities is simply what happens to the quantum field theory on long wavelengths. In other words, the behavior under RG flow to the infrared. So there's two key features of the holographic dictionary that we need to understand. The first is, yes, which we touched on earlier. So the idea is that radial evolution or time evolution in the bulk is related to renormalization group flow in the quantum field theory. And it's actually inverse. So in the sense that, so in quantum field theory, renormalization group flow goes from the ultraviolet, high energies, down to the infrared. And that corresponds to inverse time evolution. So the ultraviolet of the quantum field theory corresponds to late times in the cosmology, and the infrared of the quantum field theory corresponds to early times. So the cosmological arrow of time is opposite to RG flow. In the domain wall picture, in standard ADS-CFT, late times is like the near boundary behavior, and the infrared is like the deep interior of the domain wall. So this picture is quite satisfying, right? It's sort of consistent with the idea of a cosmic arrow of time. Your renormalization group flow, you're integrating out degrees of freedom as you go from the ultraviolet down to the infrared. So the entropy decreases under RG flow, and that's consistent with the cosmological arrow of time. At early times, the entropy is much, much less than at late times. So that's consistent. The second key feature, and this is sort of a key feature of holographic dualities, which is that they're strong, weak dualities. You've got two descriptions. You've got a gravitational description, and you've got a quantum field theory description. And when one is strongly coupled, the other is weakly coupled, and vice versa. So what this means is that, so in the quantum field theory, there's a coupling, a parameter that measures the strength of interactions in the quantum field theory. When this coupling is large and the quantum field theory is strongly interacting, then the gravitational theory is geometrical. It's basically Einstein gravity, the leading order. What's interesting is the opposite regime. When the quantum field theory is weakly interacting, and this is the regime where we understand the quantum field theory the best because we can compute using perturbation theory in this coupling. So when the quantum field theory is weakly interacting, the gravitational theory is strongly interacting. So basically what that means is it's non-geometric. You really would have to go up. So if you start from strong coupling and start reducing the coupling, you find all these alpha prime high curvature corrections in the bulk become important. And the limit where the quantum field theory is weakly interacting, the supergravity approximation breaks down altogether, and really you'd have to sort of go back to the full string theory sigma model. So basically the idea of a smooth spacetime geometry breaks down. This is something that's very difficult to describe from the gravitational point of view, but instead the idea is to describe it using the quantum field theory point of view, where it's perturbative and you just do ordinary perturbation theory. So I think this is something that offers new possibilities for studying the early universe. So just have this sort of cartoon here. So the standard inflationary picture, you've got Einstein gravity being valid both at early times and at late times. So this is the quantum field theory is strongly interacting both. So late times corresponds to the ultraviolet, early times corresponds to the infrared. So throughout the RG flow, which corresponds to cosmic time evolution, this quantum field theory is strongly interacting. Now, a new possibility arises if the coupling that controls how strongly interacting the quantum field theory is, if that coupling changes under RG flow. So you could go from a theory that's strongly interacting, so the quantum field theory that's strongly interacting at late times, so strongly interacting at late times, that corresponds to Einstein gravity at late times, but you could have a situation where under RG flow, when you go to the infrared, which corresponds to early times, the coupling runs and becomes weak, and that corresponds to the gravity becoming non-geometric at early times. So in some sense, the only real difference between standard inflation and this new possibility is what happens to the coupling in the quantum field theory under RG flow. And that just depends on what the quantum field theory is. But why this is potentially interesting is that if gravity is non-geometric at early times, this potentially allows you to escape the Big Bang singularity, right? The Big Bang singularity is a problem of extrapolating a geometric description of space-time right back to the earliest times, where we wind up with a singularity. If geometry is breaking down at early times, well, what happens? The only way to think about this is to think about what happens from the quantum field theory point of view. So Whether or not there's a singularity at early times in the cosmology, that maps to the question of, are observables in the quantum field theory finite in the infrared? Or are they well-behaved on long wavelengths? And that's just a quantum field theory question that you can go away and analyze. And it's actually a very interesting, so, Ted.
I'm kind of confused about the philosophy of that.
Yeah.
Because I thought you were telling us earlier that we're not considering this dual field theory to be like a complete replacement for space-time.
We are, yes.
Okay, but if we are, then I'm confused about what happens at the end of inflation. How does it describe the world today?
Yeah, so the idea is that the very early time corresponds to the deep infrared behavior of the quantum field theory, where it's weakly coupling and space-time is non-geometric. And what we're trying to compute, and then the idea is that as we go to late times in the cosmology, this is running towards the ultraviolet of the quantum field theory. It's becoming strongly coupled in the ultraviolet, which is Einstein gravity emerging. And what we're trying to do is predict fluctuation.
It seemed like your future boundary was like De Sitter space. We don't live in De Sitter space right now. We have a lot of complications.
No. So here what I'm doing is I'm using holography to model the era up to the generation of primordial perturbations.
Well, precisely, this is why I asked you whether you're proposing a fundamental replacement for space-time, or just describing effectively, say, the perturbations in inflation.
No, I think ultimately we want to do the whole of space-time, because it's after all reasonable that we are entering
How do you get beyond the end of inflation?
Yeah, so this corresponds to, the point is that plausibly we are entering a dark energy dominated phase. After all, the biggest component of the matter density right now is the dark energy. So the fate of the universe, based on what we understand about the matter content of the universe right now, it is asymptotically De Sitter.
So for the conceptual coherence of your proposal, it has to be true that we're asymptotically De Sitter in the future, and that's what you're proposing?
If you want to describe the complete cosmic history of the universe holographically, then yes, the two cases where we really understand holography in the standard sense are these asymptotically ADS and asymptotically Powell cases, and those map to cosmologies that are either asymptotically De Sitter or asymptotically Powell or inflating. So I'm focusing on space-times with this property because those are the ones we understand best right now. It's consistent with what we know about the universe because it does seem consistent with the current data that we're heading towards asymptotically De Sitter in the future. So the statement that we'll be modeling a cosmology that's asymptotically De Sitter at late times corresponds to there's a quantum field theory and it flows to a CFT in the ultraviolet.
Can your scheme accommodate both the high scale exponential expansion during inflation and the low scale exponential expansion?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
One CFT or one?
We're in one quantum field theory. So it's a quantum field theory that flows from a fixed point in the ultraviolet that corresponds to late time dark energy domination. And under RG flow, it flows to a new CFT in the infrared. And that describes the inflationary phase, which is closer to De Sitter with a different cosmological, with a different De Sitter length to the one at late times.
And then keeps going beyond that to your...
Well, I suppose if you think from a CFT point of view, you flow towards some CFT in the infrared, and that's sort of where the flow ends. I mean, yes, in principle, there could be other things, like there could be some operator that drives you off to some new fixed point.
But you had to flow to weak coupling at early times.
So the point is there's sort of two pictures. So standard inflation where Einstein gravity holds at all times. So if we want to go from standard inflation at early times to late time dark energy domination, that's a flow from a UV CFT to an infrared CFT. And of course, they've got different De Sitter length, which corresponds to CFTs with sort of different properties. So if you're flowing from one strongly coupled CFT to another strongly coupled CFT, that will be the standard picture where you've got near De Sitter inflation at early times, and you're flowing to dark energy domination at late times. And what I'm talking about here is that there's a new possibility offered by holography, which is that you could flow from a late time De Sitter dominated phase, which is like a UV CFT, and you could flow in infrared to a theory that becomes weakly interacting. And it's going to correspond to this Powell or geometry case. So it's not going to be a CFT, it's going to have a slightly different property. It's a different type of QFT. But essentially it's just a question of what you're mapping trajectories under RG flow on the quantum field theory side to cosmic histories. And what happens at early times just depends on what happens to the coupling in the quantum field theory in the infrared. So I think holography allows you to model both scenarios. It's just a question of what happens to the coupling in the quantum field theory as you go to the infrared. So you want to map cosmic evolution to RG flow. and sort of what happens in both just depends on what quantum field theory you're talking about.
Okay, I think I wouldn't be asking you this if this weren't a velocity slash physics.
No, please, yes, because we are, yeah.
But I mean, since it is, it seems like the conceptual foundation is a really important aspect.
It is, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
What's not, still not clear to me, you said model, you used the word model.
Yes.
So model doesn't sound to me like you're proposing a fundamental theory of the universe.
I would like to. I'm using the word model because what we're doing is based on analytic continuation from standard ADS CFTs.
That's an answer that makes me confident that I can use your model or your analytic continuation to cover the entire history of the universe from the non-geometric early phase to the late time, let's say, dark energy dominated expansion. I haven't quite gathered whether you're even asserting that you can do that.
Yes, I believe you can. That's right. Yeah. So that's something you can model holographically, and what you would expect is that, as we were just.
Doesn't it seem to require a very strange RG flow because.
Why? What's strange about it?
Well, during the early inflation stage, you had one form of RG flow, and then you had a complete change over to the late time one that happened.
No, it's. Why is it?
Both have to be. RG flows within the same QFT.
There's only one RG flow. There's one QFT, one RG flow, as you're saying.
Just saying. Its behavior is very different at different times and epochs.
It's not so in the ultraviolet, it's a strongly coupled UV fixed point, and that's the late time dark energy dominated phase. And then, evolving backwards in cosmic time is RG flowing. And if we want to have a picture like this, then we're just flowing so that the coupling, the quantum field theory becomes weakly interacting in the infrared, which corresponds to early times.
So it's also strong during inflation, but not...
So the point is this is an alternative to inflation. So in some sense, there's two possibilities for what happens under RG flow. It remains strongly interacting, So in other words, under RG flow, which is going back in time to the early universe, the coupling can either stay strong or it can evolve to become weakly coupled at early times. There are different possibilities, and they correspond to different cosmologies. One, which is basically Einstein gravity at early and late times, a standard inflationary scenario. But there's a second alternative, which is that if the coupling becomes weak, the quantum field theory becomes perturbative under RG flow, then that corresponds to a different possibility to inflation, which is when the early universe becomes non-geometric. The gravity description becomes strongly coupled, and holography allows you to model that through weakly coupled quantum field theory. So I see these as two distinct possibilities, but they're both encompassed by the same holographic framework. The difference is in the nature of the quantum field theories and what happens to their RG flows.
Paul, there's a question in the back.
Please, Astrid.
Yeah, so it's a different question, I'm a little puzzled by the fact that the physical direction of time evolution is associated with the unphysical direction of the RG scale, right? Because...
The opposite direction, yeah.
I mean, so the physical direction of the RG flow is from the UV to the I.
Absolutely, yeah. So this arrow is RG flow.
Yeah, exactly. And because, there's this property that's called universality, where you can write down, all sorts of higher order operators that generically get suppressed and flow to universal values in the IR. So that means that, if you were to follow the RG flow backwards towards the UV, you need sort of initial conditions with infinite precision in order to be able to know where you're going to flow to in the UV. And now this is what you would have to do in order to really map to model the physical time evolution, right? If you wanted to evolve from the early to the late universe, you would sort of, in your RG flow, need infinite precision to know about all of the higher order operators, which are all universal in the IR.
Why
that is not...
No, I think that
for that description.
Yeah, this is the picture. So in the IR, the physics is universal. You're flowing to a infrared fixed point described by CFT.
Yeah.
So the physics of inflation is... I'll get back to the other direction. Yeah, so if you just go back to the inflationary physics, it's like flowing to an infrared CFT and the dynamics is universal, and that's sort of what the standard inflationary picture is describing. If you go forward in time, which is going up towards the ultraviolet, if you flow to a UV fixed point, that would describe the end of inflation, but you want to reheat, you want to end inflation, reheat the universe and transition to a standard matter and radiation dominated phase. So that would correspond to, as you're saying, having an irrelevant operator that drives you away from this UV fixed point to a new UV fixed point, which will be the late time dark energy dominated phase.
Yeah.
And issues of fine tuning are very interesting. I think this is something you want to think about holographically.
It's
My question is just whether in practice this description is useful to actually model time evolution because of this challenge that you would need precision with your infrared starting point for the edge trajectory to actually know where you're ending up.
But I think this is exactly the idea. I think the idea is we want to think about time evolution in cosmology and naturalness and stuff in cosmology in precisely RG terms and naturalness under RG flow. And I think that is precisely the idea. We want to map RG flows onto cosmic evolutions. And, you know, if you want to change what happens in the ultraviolet, you're adding irrelevant operators in your theory, and that's driving you to a new direction as you go towards the ultraviolet, which is at late times. So questions sort of fine-tuning. I think we should try and translate cosmological questions about fine-tuning into questions about fine-tuning of RG flows, where we can say a lot of very quantitative things, as you know. So I think this is the picture.
Hold on a second. We've got about 10 minutes. We can maybe go another five.
That sounds good. I'll try and just sort of get through so we get some concrete models and then we'll just terminate.
Sure. Let's try to let Paul kind of wrap this up.
Great. Okay. So the picture is we're just mapping cosmic time evolution to the renormalization group flow of a quantum field theory. Different cosmological histories correspond to quantum field theory, different quantum field theories that have different behaviors under RG flow. And okay, so an interesting question is if the quantum field theory is becoming weakly interacting under RG flow, that corresponds to a universe where gravity is becoming non-geometric at early times. If it's not geometric, there's not necessarily some sort of Big Bang singularity. Whether that's true or not is something you should address by calculating the quantum field theory. So the question is, do quantum field theory observables have singularities in the infrared? If they do, then that suggests that you've got a Big Bang singularity problem in your cosmology. If your quantum field theory is well behaved in the infrared, then there's simply no problem. You can describe as early times as you like in the cosmology just by going to longer wavelengths in the quantum field theory. This is an interesting question in quantum field theory, whether or not quantum field theories are well behaved in the infrared. The class of quantum field theories that correspond to asymptotically power law geometries, this is the class I'm interested in, these correspond to quantum field theories that are massless, and they're super renormalizable. In three dimensions, the Yang-Mills coupling has mass dimensions, and so these quantum field theories are super renormalizable. So they're very well behaved in the ultraviolet, but they generically have infrared singularities, at least within perturbation theory. But there's some very interesting physics, which is that the infrared singularities are really just an artifact of perturbation theory. And if you resum infinite classes of diagrams, then you find that these apparent infrared singularities disappear. And basically the Yang-Mills coupling, which has dimension one, acts as an infrared regulator. So this is physics. It's actually very well understood for theories with vector matter since work from the 80s. So in these, like for example, an ON vector model, you can resum a large class, an infinite class of Feynman diagrams and get a non-perturbative result, and that's infrared finite. And if you expand it out in perturbation theory again, you find that the Yang-Mills coupling plays a role of an infrared regulator. So the question is, what happens for quantum field theories where matter is in the adjoint representation? This is the class of quantum field theories that corresponds to sort of standard holographic descriptions. So in that case, what happens in the infrared, you can't use these sort of large N resummation techniques for vector matter, but this is something you can simulate directly on the lattice. But there's some very exciting new sort of lattice quantum field theory work probing 3D massless supernormalizable quantum field theories. And the evidence right now is that they are indeed infrared finite, just as you'd expect for vector matter. So basically the question is, what happens at very early times in the cosmology is translated to the question of what happens in the infrared of the quantum field theory.
Question if you have non-compact space? Like supposing your spatial topology was compact.
Good, yes, that's right. So far I've only considered sort of flat spatial slices in the cosmology, which is quantum field theories that live on a flat space-time direction. But yes, you're right, if the QFT lived on a sphere, then there'd be infrared effects where it's sensitive to the curvature of the sphere, and that could change what happens in infrared. Yeah, I haven't looked at that. That's interesting. In a sense, the cosmological data so far is that the spatial slices are flat, so that's why I'm using this. Yeah, that's what we know from the cosmic microwave background. So that's why I'm focusing just on flat geometries, flat quantum field theories. Let me just push on so I can finish on time. So I just want to show you two more slides. So what I'd like to do is model cosmologies of this form where gravity, you've got standard gravity at late times, but at early times you're flowing to a non-geometric description where we're going to compute everything from the quantum field theory point of view, and the quantum field theory is at weak coupling, so I use perturbation theory in the quantum field theory. So to make observational predictions of the microwave background, I need to do calculations in this 3D quantum field theory. What is it? Well, I'm imagining SUN Yang Mills theory, we can, and then the matter content, I can have scalars, fermions, I can have interactions of various forms, Yukawa interactions, quartic couplings. The key thing is that for spacetimes that are asymptotically power law, this is in the version where the quantum field theory is strongly coupled, you know that the quantum field theory has this symmetry principle known as generalized conformal invariance. So basically, the Lagrangian, there's a 1 over G Yang Mills squared out the front, and then all the other operators have dimension 4. So this symmetry principle constrains what you can write down as the Lagrangian. So basically, you want to write down the most general quantum field theory in 3D that's consistent with this generalized conformal invariance, and the remaining parameters are the rank of the gauge group, which is like the number of colors, and then the number of scalars, the number of fermions, and the interactions. So you parameterize the most general quantum field theory that's consistent with the symmetry principle imposed by the space-time asymptotics. And you can go away, and then you can compute 2 3-point correlation functions of the energy momentum tensor, and that's, and then use the holographic formulae that map you to the predictions for the primordial power spectrum and non-Gaussianities. And even without doing any calculations, you know you're going to get a really close fit to the data. I knew this right from the beginning. So the leading calculate, you know, so for example, for the stress tensor 2-point function, the leading behavior, it goes as n squared. And so the primordial power spectrum, which is like 1 over the stress tensor 2-point function, it goes as 1 over n squared. So this sort of large n limit in the quantum field theory is going to be consistent right from the outset with the small amplitude of the primordial power spectrum. So large n maps to small amplitude, and the leading calculation, the leading contribution to the stress tensor 2-point function, which is at one loop, that goes as momentum cubed, and that will give you a scalar invariant power spectrum. And then the two-loop corrections to the stress tensor 2-point function, so the coupling only enters at two loops, and this gives you a small deviation from scalar invariance. So Yang-Mills coupling G squared has dimension 1, so perturbation theory is really in this effective dimensionless coupling, which is G squared N over the momentum Q. And so basically, yeah, from the quantum field theory calculations, you can see straight off that the stress tensor 2-point function, it goes as Q cubed plus corrections of order G effective squared, and these corrections push you away from scalar invariance. So the fact that the quantum field theory is weakly interacting maps directly to the fact you get a nearly scalar invariant power spectrum. So the two key features, small amplitude, near scalar invariance, corresponds to large N and weak coupling. And I suppose the other key point is that the shape of the power spectrum is different. So standard inflation, you typically get sort of power law primordial spectra. You've got an amplitude, and it goes as momentum to some power, which is ns minus 1. In these models here, you get sort of logarithmic behavior. And so the shape of the power spectrum is different. It's something you just go away and compute using Feynman diagrams. And so you get a complete set of predictions. So this is work that I've been doing with, this is talking about work that was done with Adam Bozovsky and Costa Skenderis, my long-term collaborators. And we really computed a full suite of predictions for the CMB power spectrum and non-Gaussianities at 2 and 3 points. And so the key point is that this is actually a good fit to the data. So the most recent fitting is actually work from Niesh and his student Beth Gould. And so this is the Planck data here. And yeah, so the red curve is basically the fit predicted from the holographic cosmology model. So this is like, and then the blue curve, which you can't really see because they basically fit over each other, that's a standard cosmological model where you've got a power law primordial spectrum. So what I'm fitting is a power law primordial spectrum versus the power spectrum coming from this holographic model, which is computing the stress tensor 2-point function. And basically they're both comparable to within 1 sigma based on current data. The inset here is blowing up the very low L, large angular scales part of the data here. So this is the only point at which there's any real sort of significant difference, but it's well within the error bars here. The bottom plot is just the residuals. So there's some issues that we can sort of go into later, but the only thing I want to make is that at large momenta, which is like high L, this coupling is very small, but if you go to large angular scales, which is small q, this coupling becomes large, and then the perturbation theory calculation becomes unreliable. So for L values of less than about 30 or so, the perturbative calculation in the QFT is breaking down. And to model that region better, you probably need to go to lattice QFT. So if you just look at the values of L greater than 30, which is the vast majority of the data, for that range, the quantum field theory calculations are under control. And for that range, then the difference expect a sort of standard power law inflation is less than 1 sigma. So, okay, so that's why I'm going to stop there. So the point is that by taking this notion of a quantum field theory that becomes weakly interacting in the infrared, that gives you a holographic model of a universe where gravity becomes non-geometric at early times. You make predictions for what you see via quantum field theory calculations. You potentially evade the problem of a Big Bang singularity because your quantum field theory, all the observables are finite in the infrared. It's a predictive model because, you know, once you tell me the quantum field theory, once you tell me the content of the quantum field theory, I can compute what all the power spectrum non-Gaussian entities are. Now, the quantum field theory is parameterized phenomenologically. I don't know what the precise matter content is. This is what I'm putting in as parameters, you know, the number of fields of all the different types. But there are certain predictions that are model independent, such as the non-Gaussianities. So, for example, the three-point non-Gaussianity of curvature perturbations, this is precisely equilateral shape. F and L is 5 over 36, no matter what field content you put in the model. So there are certain predictions that are independent of the field content of the dual quantum field theory. But it's also, it's falsifiable in the sense that if you have quantum field theories of certain types, they can be ruled out. So if you had just gauge fields and fermions, then that is ruled out by the Planck data. So certain classes, certain quantum field theories aren't compatible with the data. So the data does give you constraints on what quantum field theories you're talking about. And yeah, so the point is it gives you new models of the early universe that potentially resolve the Big Bang singularity. They're predictive, they're falsifiable, and they currently fit to within one sigma of the, you know, the best fit model we have from standard inflation right now. So I'll stop there. Thank you, everyone.
Maybe one or two short questions on this obviously bloated topic.
My question is there any mechanism which explains why during inflation the QFT coupling runs exponentially towards UV and then slows down?
It doesn't necessarily run exponentially. I think the thing is it's a quantum field theory. It's got some coupling here. The thing is that here what we're doing is we're taking a quantum field theory that has this generalized conformal symmetry, and this has been used as a model of the very early universe up towards the end of this non-geometric phase and the formation of the CMB. We know that after the formation of the CMB, Einstein gravity is holding, so we need to have some irrelevant operators in our quantum field theory that drives us to a strongly interacting phase that describes Einstein gravity at late times. So in some sense, the idea is just to sort of model cosmic evolution via the specifics of the RG flow of some quantum field theory.
If I reframe my question, it would be, is there any mechanism, like in regular space-time cosmology, inflation explains why space-time expands differently in different regimes. Does that correspond to the QFT coupling running differently?
Yeah, so I suppose if you like, in standard inflationary cosmology, when you're model building, what you're doing is you're tuning, you're adjusting the inflationary potential. Different models of inflation have, for example, different field content, but particularly different shapes of the inflationary potential. Here the idea is that we've got quantum field theories that lie within a broad class, and the model building corresponds to what is the field content of this quantum field theory? How many scalars, how many fermions, what are the Yukawa and quartic couplings, how many colors have we got, and so forth. So the idea is, instead of model building a gravity model of inflation, we're phenomenologically parameterizing some quantum field theory of the class that is known to have holographic descriptions. And then, you know, that once you tell me what the quantum field theory is, what its field content is, that determines what happens under RG flow, and that determines the history of the cosmology. But the idea is, using the data, you can actually rule out certain classes of quantum field theory. For example, just gauge fields and only fermions. That gives you a predictions for the CMB power spectrum that don't fit the data. Rob.
Yeah, so I mean, I have a lot of questions, but in the interest of time, just sort of one. How far in both of these directions can you go? Like, how far in the IR do you go, and what does gravity look like there? And conversely, in the UV, we got a strongly coupled theory, but we think we have a good idea of what the cosmology will be. So do we learn things about the strongly coupled theory by analogical reasoning in the IR?
Okay, so let's break that up. So at early times, which is corresponding to the infrared behavior of the quantum field theory. So I suppose a key issue is sort of, are there going to be singularities developing in QFT observables? And that's the question of, is there a Big Bang singularity at early times? So on that question, it's difficult to answer. So in that question, this section here about what happens to the quantum field theory observables in the infrared. So the best, for vector theories, these correspond to gravities that have higher spin fields. So this isn't the real universe. But for theories of this nature, you can really sort of, they're very well understood via large energy summation, and they really are infrared finite. For QFTs with matter in the adjoint representation, which is corresponding to Einstein gravity, for here we've got to do lattice simulations, and the sort of state-of-the-art lattice simulations, they haven't yet done the correlation function of two stress tensors. They've done trace phi squared correlators, but the lattice data is suggesting that they are indeed infrared finite. In terms of understanding the CMB, where we're doing this calculation in the regime where the quantum field theory is weakly interacting, and that's good for most of the CMB, the low L scales here, this coupling becomes large, and that's where we're going to need some sort of lattice input. But for most of the CMB, the small amplitude of the primordial power spectrum is consistent with the QFT being weakly coupling, and that's that means our perturbation theory calculations are valid. If we want to understand, so this is modeling the generation of the primordial perturbations, and now we know that ultimately we transition to a matter and radiation dominated phase where Einstein gravity is valid. So that means that we need to add irrelevant operators to this quantum field theory that change the nature of the RG flow. And if we want to end up with cosmological constant domination at late times, that would correspond to adding irrelevant operators to the QFT that drive us towards a fixed point in the ultraviolet. So this quantum field theory here, these are just the operators that become relevant in the infrared and that dominate the infrared physics, the early time behavior of the universe. If we want to model the complete cosmic history of the universe out to, say, a late time dark energy dominated phase, we would need to add in operators that are irrelevant from the IR perspective, but that would change the fate in the ultraviolet, which is late times.
Do we know what they are? Do we know how to do it?
Yeah, well, we in some sense, it's a sort of model building exercise. So, for example, if you had a Phi-6 interaction here, that wouldn't be consistent with generalized conformal invariance, but that would be an irrelevant operator that would change the RG flow in the ultraviolet, and that would be a sort of very simplistic model of reheating. And the trouble with modeling reheating is that it's not very sort of universal. So the idea would be to start modeling reheating the transition to the sort of standard hot Big Bang cosmology. We need to now add extra operators that become, that are irrelevant and that basically dominate the behavior in the ultraviolet. So that sort of model building phase for the end of inflation, when you're sort of starting to think about that right now.
Okay, we're running a little short time here, but
there was a question online. Do you want to?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, so just maybe you can unmute and ask your question.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
My question has to do with, I don't know, when you talk about this coupling, what actual coupling procedure are we talking about? I'm familiar with the minimal coupling from GR of that thing. So are you saying as time goes later on, we're more dependent on the curvature of space-time, and that's how we get back Einstein gravity, and earlier on we're not?
No, so this is a coupling purely in the quantum field theory. So it's like a gauge theory, like an SUN Yang-Mills theory. So the coupling is a combination of quantum field theory parameters. So it's a Yang-Mills coupling G squared N. That would be like the at Hooft coupling. In three dimensions, Yang-Mills coupling G squared has dimension one. So we make this dimensionless combination here. So the quantum field theory expansion is controlled by this dimensionless effective at Hooft coupling. And it's basically G squared N over Q. So it depends on the quantum field theory parameters. So it's a purely quantum field theory coupling that's controlling the strength of interactions in the quantum field theory. It's not a gravitational coupling of any sort.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah.
Okay, so we thank you, Steve. And,